This is a huge topic, and what we're talking about here and the things that Sean just enumerated are the necessary but not sufficient pieces. We have to have those things in place in order to actually attack the real problem. The real problem is going to be not are you transparent, but are you able to actually evaluate and report to the various agencies with whom compliance is going to be the top topic.
Hello and welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Bange, founder and CEO of BARC, and my guests today are Sean Rogers, CEO of BARC US, and Merv Adrian, heading IT Market Strategy. And both are veteran analysts that conducted a study for BARC called Optimizing Your Architecture for AI Success. And meant here is not only an IT architecture, but an overall architecture. And how can you as a company prepare and execute successfully for AI innovation? We started with a fundamental question. So where are companies today? How many are actually advanced on their AI journey? And you might be surprised about the answer. We also looked at the challenges companies are facing. So why is it that many AI initiatives are not advancing as fast as companies might want them to? Then we tackled a lot of interesting questions around how to innovate with AI, how to get ready, and how to be successful with these types of projects. For example, how do enterprises manage AI projects? Who do they trust in implementing them? Or what's the role of specialized or industry-specific models in a Gen AI initiative? This and many more we discussed in this super interesting conversation. Enjoy it. Hi, Merv. Hi, Sean. Great to have you on the Data Culture Podcast.
Fantastic to be here, Carsten. Thanks for having us.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely. We want to talk about your latest research project, which was on optimizing your architecture for AI innovation, which is obviously a very hot topic for many, many organizations. Everyone's trying to get their head around AI and how to prepare for it, how to execute on it. And that was exactly what this survey and this research was about. Sean, maybe you could start to give us a bit of an overview. Tell us a little bit about the research and its focus.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. We're really proud of the work that we executed. And, you know, one of the things that we were very much focused on is during times of disruption like this, when exciting things are happening, I think every analyst in the world has a great opinion about what's going on. But the thing that makes it super valuable is when you bring expertise and opinions together with data. And that was what Merv and I were most excited about in exploring the topic. AI innovation and optimizing your architecture. I mean, that's one of the big questions everybody is asking. And we'll get into some of the findings in a minute. We executed a global piece of research. So we talked to people in across the world. We had 335 individuals, professionals that qualified to answer our survey questions. And by qualification, I mean they had knowledge, a working knowledge of what their company or enterprise was doing with AI and the strategy. And of course, to make sure we were smart about it, we looked at a wide variety of industries. We looked at various company sizes from the small to the medium and the largest. And that was a big, important part of it. And because every company is doing different things. So when you do this type of research, it's predicated on a good methodology. And we certainly executed that through the BARC research engine. So it was a great outcome. As far as the topic goes, we wanted to figure out where people were at, what kind of technology decisions they were making, what their strategy looked like across the board, how they were including cloud, where they were looking for help. Merv, help me out. Did I miss anything in some of the topic part of it?
There's a very fundamental thing I've learned as you and I have both gone out and done speeches about this and talked to consumers of this research. One of the things people have come up to me and said is, thank you very much for not meaning technology architecture. And that was deliberate. The title of the report is Optimizing Your Architecture, Not Your Technology Architecture. And a good part of this research is about how are you planning? Who is responsible? What standards are you going to follow? A great deal of this taught us quite a bit about the readiness of organizations to move forward. If you don't have a plan and you don't know what your target is, it's really hard to get it right.
Hey, maybe we can start with actually this last aspect. So what did you find out about readiness? Where are organizations today on this particular topic?
Well, it's a very mixed bag, and it actually forms the first chart in the study is very specifically about how organizations assess their own state. We ask them, for example, who's in charge? What standards do you have for things like compliance and security? What does your project governance look like? By the way, that was the one with the worst score. Of all the questions we asked, the lowest readiness, if you want to use that word, came out of the project governance and oversight question, which is a bit of a challenge. We ask about seven different dimensions and ask them to assess themselves from not talking at all about all the way to formalized or even in production. And we rank them against that. And the first chart in the study shows that. And we found something very interesting as a second pass through the data after we first got it back. We went back and said, how many organizations actually were at the top end of readiness for all of them? And so that was a long way to answer your question, Karsten. About 20% of 335 respondents are what we would call high readiness. That is, they've moved far down the path on all seven of these things. And Sean, let me hand it back to you for any additional comments.
No, I have to admit we were a little surprised. I think one of the ideas that we picked up during the entire project was there seems to be this sense of urgency, and we see it in the public when we get to talk to end users and we're out talking about the research. There's this incredible fear of missing out. People are worried that they have missed the opportunity already. I have a slide in one of the decks that I'm using that has that big red image that says, keep calm and carry on. And the point that I'm making to end users is only 20% of the people that we're speaking to have moved past where you're at. So you're on the train. You're just not quite as far along. And so you could flip that number and say 80% are still trailing that 20%. And that's where most everybody is at. And I think it's kind of important to keep that in mind that when it's, I was preparing some information to share with a group of end users the other day, and I did the calendar math, Karsten, and it's only been 18 months since ChatGPT was announced. It seems like it was 5 years ago, but really it's literally 18 months ago. So, AI in and of itself has been around the market for a very long time, much longer than 18 months. But ChatGPT was this moment where everyone stopped and started paying attention. And so my comment about high readiness is I think they're a very cool group of people to watch. We learned a lot of interesting things about what they're trying and what they're doing differently. But at the same time, the bulk of the public, the bulk of users that we spoke to, are on the journey, but further behind.
I'll make one brief addition to that. And that is that for me, that's almost the very definition of good research. We're not about pursuing that, that error in analysis that comes up when you basically confirm your prejudices by selecting your examples carefully. We went out to ask questions, not knowing what the answers were going to be. And yes, absolutely, we were surprised. And for me, that's the best kind of an outcome. It also, by the way, tees up the next research really well, and we're excited about that too.
Yeah, I can absolutely confirm, but this is what I'm seeing too. From my experience, one of the most underestimated obstacles is really integration. Yeah? So how can I integrate AI into my enterprise? And it's integration needed is on three levels. And that's sometimes a little bit overlooked. What do I mean with three levels? Is you need obviously a technical integration. So you come up with new algorithms or a new system you want to use, and somehow you have to integrate. That's technically. So data has to flow back and forth and so on. And you need to think about user interfaces and so on. But then there's also what we call a business integration. So you have to really think about the processes and where does it fit and where does it actually provide value. And that's often way harder than just the technical integration. So, and then there's the third aspect, that's the organizational integration, which is in the end talking about people. Yeah, and people maybe have to change their behavior, and maybe there are decisions to be taken differently because AI now supports you or even automates part of that. And all three levels have to be tackled more or less at once. And that's why I think integration is really one of the most overlooked obstacles. When we think about why is it only 20%, which I think is the obvious question here.
It's odd that some of these highly strategic aspects get overshadowed by simple challenges, right? It's the respondents in the study, the top response to challenges wasn't integration. And to your point, it was much lower in our numbers. And it comes out at skill sets. And it's the same hysteria we saw when big data became a thing and when data science had its rise in popularity. Everybody was scrambling to find a data scientist because it was the coolest or sexiest job, according to Harvard. And that is the number one thing that was ranked by the respondents to the survey, which we're very concerned. 39% of them said this is our number one problem. But after we crossed all of our data, Merv can comment about what kind of the high readiness guys came up with, because their priorities have changed already. They've moved past skills.
They slipped down a little bit on readiness, I guess, thinking we're already at this, so we're not quite as worried about whether we have the skills. But what they discovered was they didn't have enough money. In fact, cost was a big issue. And I think this is a topic for further exploration, but a conclusion I draw from the way the data came back was that what they were telling us was that they hadn't budgeted enough, because the budget question actually flashed pretty brightly. So I think a lot of organizations don't really understand how much it's truly going to cost. Some of that, Karsten, may come back to how much of the cost is going to be in integration. But another thing that really leaped out at me here was we've been watching a trend for years of decision-making about information technology moving outside of the IT organization into business units. One of the largest responses relative to all other responses was our question about which resources they were going to use internally. And IT won big on this one. The most significant response I've seen for, well, it's our IT guys who were going to do this. It was actually, I'm doing the math in my head right now, is 87% of the respondents either said extremely likely or likely to IT leading this project. I have to say, as an old IT guy myself, that's pretty encouraging.
Yeah. And it's different from what we saw in the last years, where decisions on software and data and analytics actually moved a lot into the business departments or domains, which is, I think, a general trend anyway. But this particular technology obviously needs IT.
It does, for sure. I think that there's a level of complexity here that has made the direction go towards IT. And I think it's kind of what you were talking about from the integration aspect that you brought up. When you look at all three parts of your insights on the topic, IT can't be excluded here. And it's interesting enough that while we're talking about challenges for end users, number three on our survey was cross-functional collaboration. And it supports the premise, right, Karsten, that if you aren't collaborating correctly right now, this is one of those moments where the line of business with IT and with the executives' sponsorship are going to need to come together in a cohesive way to address everything that we're talking about. Earlier last year, Bark did a survey of 539 respondents, and we asked a question in that research about what role is your board of directors playing? And very much unlike other disruptions, you know, the board's very active on this one. It's very clear that AI is a board mandate. And additionally, 37% of the boards that our respondents are reporting into said they're looking at new funding vehicles, new budget increases, and so on. So, yeah, this one is disruptive in a very interesting way.
Well, this is a moment for be afraid, be very afraid. You know, we talked about and the acronym that we use at least over here on the western side of the globe. For something Sean talked about before, the fear of missing out. FOMO is an acronym that is widely used here. It's very closely associated with another typical phrase, which is the bright, shiny object phase. Something that happens in the early enthusiasm is, this is really good. Here's some money. Go find one. Which is why we thought planning was such an important focus. And I think that comes back to your question about integration as well. Because the second most frequent response to the question about what resources are you going to use, fortunately, from my view, was my existing vendors. That is, people I'm already working with, who I have a good working relationship with, whose technology I trust. And let's face it, most of this stuff is going to be about data. It's going to be about compute. We have lots of people helping with that so far. Introducing a brand new vendor because they seem to have some sort of extraordinarily different thing may not be the best path here. The guidance I've been giving people after all my presentations when they come up to talk is, have you asked your database guy, your BI guy, your data science guy, have you asked them what they've got for this problem you have before you go out to find someone else? And unfortunately, the answer is often no. And the most recent example of that phenomenon, and all due respect to the vendor I'm about to name, but Snowflake. A lot of people bought their first Snowflake without even looking at another vendor because they thought it was an entirely unique value proposition. Nothing about what we're looking at now is an entirely unique proposition. Starting with your trusted vendors is really a good place to go. And it will minimize the number of integration steps.
Yeah, and we can report that every single vendor we are tracking has changed their roadmap for their products. At this particular date, it only took a few weeks and everyone said, okay, something's happening here and we need to tackle that. We need to incorporate this into our products. And this year, 2024, is the year where we can actually see something happening. So we see something realizing in software. And that's why I think it's a good idea to at least take a look what the existing vendors are doing, because they all did put this on their product roadmaps.
It's good for us as analysts. It's a good moment for our value to those customers, because the difference between vendors saying they're about to do something, just hang on a minute for the public preview, and the vendors who are saying, I've got something that's ready for you right now, is not always obvious in their marketing messages. And that's one of the things we look at very carefully.
Well, there's a change. You know, we're halfway through 2024. And like I said, only 18 months off of the GPT announcements, but we're starting to see it as we go to events. So in the beginning, that 2-week period that Carsten's talking about, when you could literally hear roadmap breaks being applied and screeches as the steering wheels of roadmaps pivoted, it's an exciting moment. And everybody was clumped together. Everyone had great slides, great intentions, and some had some very cool forward-looking strategies. Now we're 6 months down the road in 2024, 18 months abstracted from those pivots, and the box of vendors is elongating. There are some that are still hysterically waving slides, and there are many who are delivering. And the delivery aspect is getting kind of exciting. It's starting to, from my point of view, it's abstracting some of the complexity. It's making it a bit more democratized and easier for people within organizations to get on this AI train. And I think the next year to 2 years is still going to be a very exciting thing to watch. But it also is a moment of inflection for businesses or software vendors that are struggling with their foundational tech. If they're not ready to pivot, if they weren't ready to pivot and the whole pivot was mostly slides, then they're paying the price already 6 months in to 2024. It's remarkable to see how this box is elongating. Murph?
It's very hard for a vendor to articulate their differentiation when everybody is doing the same thing. So it has been a lot of fun as an analyst to watch at all these conferences we've been going to, the different approaches that the vendors take. And a handful of them, I think, understand one very fundamental thing, that it is going to be an ecosystem project, that they are going to be successful if they partner with some of the other players on the landscape to deliver the ultimate result. There are a handful of vendors who can attempt to go it alone, with the hyperscalers. It's not always true that they can. They might tell us they will. But more likely, as people evaluate these handful of entirely new technologies they haven't thought about before, large language models, vector databases, embedding, things that they have not been doing before, it's still going to make sense for them to ask, A, can you do this, trusted vendor of mine? And B, if I'm working with somebody else, are you open to working with them? Have you engineered your product? And does your engineering team comfortably integrate with some of my other partners? That answer is a really important one, and it is often no.
Join us for the Data Festival Online on November 13th. We have a full day packed with online presentations from leading companies that explain how they implemented AI successfully. We have additional analysis on the market and market trends by Bark and others. So it's a full day packed with insights that will help you to define and execute on your AI strategy. We stream in two time zones, in Europe and North America, so you have it easy access to this great content. See you then. Let's take a look at a different topic here. As one of the obstacles, we always identify also trust. So trust in the outcomes, and obviously this hallucination of Gen AI models is not really helping here. So maybe you can tell us a little bit more about what you found in terms of responsible AI and the role of trust, and basically how that maybe helps or, on the other, maybe inhibits some of this AI progress.
Well, I'll tell you from my perspective, maturity dictates priorities. And I have a slide that I use on this because I like to make this point. One of the things we haven't really talked out loud about is, Merv mentioned up front these seven criteria that we look at for maturity, but one of the things that we separated because we wanted to dive into a little bit deeper is responsible AI practices and policies. And we separated it because responsible AI is a policy and ethics sort of thing that a company sets up on their own. This is how we will use this cool technology. And these are guardrails that we want to set up. And the list of things is really long. But to your question about transparency and trust and hallucinations, one of the scary things, and I think Merv will agree, we know this will change if we ask this question again in 6 months. But when we did ask this question, in the bottom third of priorities for users, 335 people, the bottom third was accuracy and hallucination management, equity and inclusion, environmental sustainability, job impact, model bias. These were at the bottom of people's priorities. And the things that were at the top, Karsten, were kind of more academic in a sense, like, securing AI models, securing AI data, data privacy, making sure we're kind of keeping pace with regulations. It showed that right now we have some growing to do from a maturity standpoint. And transparency and trust is going to be in here in the beginning, which is when you really should focus on it, right? You should make sure you get it right early on, not as your second wave of thinking, I guess.
This is a huge topic. And what we're talking about here and the things that Sean just enumerated are the necessary but not sufficient pieces. We have to have those things in place in order to actually attack the real problem. The real problem is going to be not are you transparent, but are you able to actually evaluate and report to the various agencies with whom compliance is going to be the top topic? If you don't have the means to answer those questions, you're really out of luck. Once you have the means, then you can actually start to do the hard work. In the last 5 months, there have been five major compliance-related regulatory announcements from the EU, in South America, in North America, and just keeping up with what those requirements are, let alone complying with them, is going to be absolutely impossible if organizations don't understand the means by which they will meet and report on those requirements.
And Karsten, this goes directly back to the point you made up front, people and process, not just tech, right? It has to be everything. And if you don't have your regulatory people included, if you don't have your legal department included in your strategy, you're going to make mistakes. I make a joke when I give talks about at the end of this year, analysts like myself and others will write articles about massive public failures, people that screwed up. And I joke a lot that if you don't do these things, you're going to be in my article, and you don't want to be in my article because that's not a good thing for your brand. So, yeah. Don't be in Sean's article. So,
absolutely. If you have to answer the question, where should we use AI first, or where are the good applications of AI? What would your answer be?
It is precisely the problem we were talking about, that people walk in the room and say, here's this cool new thing. How should we use it? The fact is, the fit should be obvious. People should have problems and should be able to look at some of the problems they're confronting and say, hey, maybe that AI thing would be good here. I don't mean to criticize the question. Obviously, it is the way we do it, but it is extraordinary how creative and inventive the uses that we're seeing have become, even as seemingly mundane a thing as taking a doctor's notes from an interaction with a patient and automating the processes of ordering tests, generating a prescription, creating the appropriate mechanics for the insurance company or other payer to do the payment. All of that stuff can be automated, and most of it is relatively straightforward, mundane automation technology. But when it's triggered by a system that transcribes an audio recording, identifies the keywords, connects them to the processes, and fires off the processes, you've got remarkable transformation. One of the things I've been saying to people recently is there's one very fundamental difference about this particular wave of transformation. In many ways, it's going to write itself. Many of these technologies are going to be used to automatically generate processes that are already well understood but haven't been automated before.
And I think that, Merv, your last point is why we're starting to see an uptick in AI agent innovation, why we're hearing so much about that, because you can take these agents and fit them into processes or applications that already exist in the enterprise to amplify their automation or their insights and so on. And so, what's the best place to start? I think it's looking at critical and high ROI processes and applications within your particular own environment, and then amplifying their capabilities with some of this new technology to, you know, some of the mundane things that we see are everyday things is I've seen a bunch of great examples about AI writing descriptions of dashboards or descriptions of processes, because the AI can do that quite well. It can see what the process is, and then because it has good text capabilities, it can save time. And I think I think some of the most fun examples I've seen in the field in the last couple of months have been where companies are taking these mundane things and amplifying.
Can I make one other point here? I think that that's useful is
yeah.
One way into this question is to look at the models people are using. One of our conclusions was it won't be one model to rule them all. Everybody's focused on a large language model like ChatGPT, which is very general in nature. And so in this study, we asked people specifically, in which domains are you looking at models? And this is partly an answer to your question, Carson. Not surprisingly, money comes first, right? The number one specialty model was about finance. The number two specialty model was looking at ourselves. It was code tools. So things to make us more efficient. And then down in the low, very low double digits were things like insurance or medical. That's going to be a characteristic of a more well-developed market than the one we're in now, where people start to understand the places this technology can be applied. And I think that's, to Sean's earlier point, this is one of the things we'll see develop rapidly in the next study or two we do, where we ask similar questions and see how the answers are evolving.
Right. So what you're saying is it's a matter of maturity that we'll see more specialized models and that these specialized models will also be used in more, let's say, functions or departments in an enterprise, but also in more industries. Did I get that right?
Foundational work has to be done to really get the value. Some of us may remember way, way, way back when in the early days of AI technology, when we had Watson from IBM on Jeopardy, answering general questions and getting a very, very good result. They beat the champions. But for some reason, that model didn't know that the Toronto airport wasn't in the United States. That particular issue hadn't come up. And that specialization matters. I need to understand medical in order to give good medical answers. I need to understand insurance or climate or, you know, any one of a number of other highly specific things. And that's not what general large language models do.
And don't forget, Merv, attached to specialty models is the size of the model. And because they're smaller, they're going to cost less to augment. And I think we're going to see not only a variety of models, but a variety of sizes within the organization. And I also believe that we will eventually start seeing like governing bodies and associations, which will start sharing models that are based on standards or specifications or those types of things. And that will represent data that you will want inside your ecosystem, because if you're in manufacturing or medical, there are certain specialty models that will granularly give you much more specific and hopefully a better advantage to your insights when you're using those. So we're in 100% agreement, Karsten. There will be a lot of models in the environments, but I would add on that they will be different sizes, and it will also be part of the cost strategy.
Last question, and here's a hard one, because I don't understand the results of the survey here. Maybe you can help me out. So the question was on how will your organization manage LLMs? So maybe it's the question about management. But what I'm seeing today is, and this is what I want to share with you, obviously, prompt engineering is the way to go, like the first step where you have your first approaches to working with an LLM, especially a public one. And what I see now is that a lot of companies are really looking into or already using a RAG, so retrieval augmented generation. Yeah, so basically adding their own documents, whatever they have. But they're saying at this maturity stage, we are seeing in the market fine-tuning, doing our own models, or training our own models is not in the question, actually. Yeah, we don't have the know-how. It's too expensive. We think the software is not mature enough yet to actually do that. So for me, that's a little bit like a progression. And now I was super surprised to see that retrieval augmented generation came in last in this question, how will your organization manage LLMs? So maybe you can help me out here, what your take is on this.
We've actually come full circle with that question, Karsten. You may remember that at the very beginning of this discussion, we talked about the fact that project management is kind of at the bottom of what things people are thinking about. This is very much a reflection of that. People don't understand that installing the model is step one. Fine-tuning it, understanding the drift of the model itself, tracking environmental changes that require changes to the model. Yeah, these are all normal processes for most kinds of IT artifacts. We haven't started to think about that. You're absolutely right. People don't get it yet. They haven't got their arms around the core technologies enough to understand how to manage them in a workflow that involves continuous operation and maintenance and evolution. And nothing will evolve more rapidly than these models do. Because as we get better and better at them, we're going to ask newer, deeper questions. And to Sean's point, we'll see consortia emerge in areas where competing companies don't see these as things they compete on, but rather things that it would be useful for them to collaborate on. There will be new business models forged out of this. So it's going to be a bumpy ride, but it is going to be a fun one.
It's interesting, Karsten, that you identified, I think, which was the lowest in that question, which was RAG. And I get asked constantly, what is it? What does it stand for? What does it mean? Why do I need to understand it? I think the entire question was sophisticated. We asked good questions. Are you looking at model drift? Are you benchmarking your models? Are you using fine tuning? Blah, blah, blah. And I think all of those were really good questions. But the feedback from our respondents, when you look at all of the numbers, were a little bit flat. And it kind of gave us this takeaway that they haven't really strategically gotten there. I do think that a lot of end users are feeling pressure, which is where that FOMO and stay calm comment comes from. They're in the hallways walking at work, and the president or the CEO says, how far along are we with our AI? And there's this huge press to be worried about checking the first box before they check the other ones. And this always happens during these times. I used to make a joke on talks where I would say there was nothing more dangerous than a non-technical CEO on an airplane with a copy of a magazine in their hand, and they would get off and get on their cell phone and call the office and go, do we have one of those Hadoops? How big is it and what color is it? And it was because they didn't fully understand it. They just kind of knew it was something they ought to be doing. I think the same is applicable here. We saw a lower maturity, a less strategic answer to how are you managing models? Because I think everybody's running around trying to figure out how to deploy a chatbot. And I'm not making fun of chatbots. I'm just saying it's kind of an entry-level application. And so, you know, that's kind of where I stand on it.
I have to say one more thing here. And we're all data guys here. I think we all understand that no matter how good your retrieval augmented generation is, it's retrieving data. It's putting it into a model. And that model is built out of data. If your data is not properly set up, if it doesn't provide, in fact, the information the data needs to require, you're in big trouble, frankly. Garbage in, garbage out is the oldest phrase we've used for years. But I have a very core belief, and we didn't get into this in this survey, and I hope we will in the next one, that the typical structured or semi-structured and unstructured data that we have is not suitable in its current form to feed models what the models need. In fact, we need a graph. The graph may be implicit. It might be a graph database. It might not be. But there is a knowledge graph at the bottom of every model. And once people begin to understand the importance of that metaphor, I think we'll move a lot faster in delivering value out of this technology.
That's a super interesting statement and gives us a lot to think about. Unfortunately, our time is up here. to wrap this up, maybe you can give us your key recommendations on how to optimize your architecture for AI innovation. What I think what came out of this discussion is that you did not only mean an IT architecture, but it's really across the enterprise. And secondly, maybe you want to give us a little bit of an outlook on the next piece of research. You already alluded to it here and there, but I think that sounds super interesting.
You know, I think I would just make the statement that it kind of dovetails on Merv's last comment. It's data, data, data. Having a foundation that's ready for AI is really key to your long-term success. I know that you're pressured, as I said, in the hallways at work to put the first check mark in place, and you know, and that's fine. But you have to have the right foundation in place in order to fully realize the ROI that you want out of AI. So if you are with one of those companies that has deferred a lot of your data projects for other bright, shiny toys of tech, it might be time to turn around and look at a few of them to make sure that you're aligned. So that'd be my best word of advice from me.
I completely agree. And if and when you've got that in place, the next most important thing, I think, is to begin with an outcome-based focus. Know exactly what it is you're trying to achieve, how you're going to define success and measure it when you get there. And if you've got those two ends figured out, then what comes next is what's the process in between? And having that defined and knowing how you're going to organize and manage and comply, as we talked about at some length, is going to be absolutely critical.
Excellent piece of advice here. Thanks to both of you. I'm looking forward to the next piece of research, and it would be great to have you back here once that is published so we can talk about your findings then again. Thanks, Mr. Sanchong, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you.